It's showtime!
Greetings and welcome to Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio Show, a show about disability rights, disability services, and your disability dollar. Your voice, an advocate, voice your opinion, voice your concerns, but please let your voice be heard. Our mission is to bring to you the people, the places, and the things that can change your life for the better, which is inclusion into society, living more independently in your home and in your community. America, welcome to Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio Show. I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, your friendly neighborhood networker. Our motto is, increase your network and you'll increase your net worth. Behind microphone number two is the hostess with the mostest, Miss Renee. Again, welcome to my listening audience. You are tuned in to Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio Show. And I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor. Although I've been blind for almost 60 years, when I was a mere lad at 13, on the 4th of July, a big firecracker exploded in my face and blinded me in both eyes. But in spite of that, every morning I rise, I feel blessed, highly favored, and I know God is good. Greetings, and how are you today, Miss Renee?
Reverend Ray, I am great. How are you?
Well, Miss Renee, you know, when you wear glasses, you know, one time during our time when I was much younger, wore a much younger man's suit, the kids that have glasses on, we used to call them four eyes. And this is the year 2020, and four bad things and winds is moving across our country and probably the world. One, we have this coronavirus. Two, we have this racial inequality of all these demonstrations. And three, we have the hurricane season, and they say this is going to be a rough one. And then four, they say the flu season is going to be rough. So, Ms. Renee, I am spending most of my time in my Bible, on my knees, and praying. So what is our lineup for today?
Well, I don't know if it can top those four things, but we do have a few things. We have the adventures of Mr. Ray and Raven, and then we have in the news, the good, the bad, and the ugly, news which affects the disability and senior communities. And then you challenge us at the end of each show in a call to action, and we want to introduce our guests. On today's show, we are honoring fatherhood and the influence of fathers. Our guest is Sean Calloway, a husband, a father, a professional, and an advocate for blind and low individuals in the world.
I think he'll take that title. All right. Well, you know, I like to start the show with the adventures of Reverend Ray and his German Shepherd seeing that dog, Miss Raven. That dog of wonder. And it is brought to you by the Big Bad Wolf Pet Store. And Wolf is spelled W-O-O-F, Wolf, Wolf. And that is located in Tacoma Park, Maryland. And they sponsor the show. And I'm telling you, the dog food that they provide for Miss Raven. I had someone read the package to me, the ingredients. They had whole eggs. I don't know what kind of eggs I've been eating. They had real cheese and some more stuff. And I said, this dog is eating better than I am. But anyway, so check out the bigbadwolf.com and let Miss Penny, that's the owner, know that you were listening to the show and you heard about the Big Bad Wolf. All right, so the adventures today, because Mr. Ray is not out and about because he is afraid of that coronavirus, but he does have to take Miss Raven out to relieve herself. So today when he took her out to relieve herself, he go by the dumpster. A gentleman was coming over to the dumpster to throw something in. And then all of a sudden he hollered to some other fellas and say, hey, come over here. You won't believe this, SH. And so they come running I don't know who's trying to call me, but they come running over, and he said, you won't believe it. Look at that dog. He said, no, I don't believe that dog is relieving itself in a bag. Okay, so I have to explain to people that, yes, CNI Guide Dog School has a sister guide dog school in Japan. And in Japan, because space is so valuable and they keep their streets clean, in order to own a dog, you have to teach the dog to relieve itself in a bag. Okay, so C and I decided that they was going to start training dogs. That 2 years ago, they started training dogs to relieve themselves in the bag. And people always ask me, well, how can you do it? No, you have to start them when they're a puppy. And I call it a portable potty belt. It's a belt you put around the dog's waist. It had two hooks on the top, two hooks on the bottom. And then you just – and then the – not the largest bag like you see from the grocery store, but a bag smaller than that with the two handles. You slip it over the dog's tail, and you take that handle and hook it on those two hooks. You take the other handle, slip it under the dog's legs, unhook it, and the dog relieves itself in the bag. And it don't hurt your back. Keep bending over the glove. You know where it's at. You take it off. You tie it up, and that is it. I mean, believe me, this is my seventh guide dog, and it is a wonderful new thing that CNI guide dog has introduced. So anyway, that was the adventures of Mr. Ray and his German Shepherd CNI dog, Mrs. Raven. And again, that's brought to you by the Big Bad Wolf Pet Store. Please call them at 202-747-3434, 202-747-3434, the Big Bad Wolf, W-O-O-F, Wolf, Wolf. Back to you, Ms. Renee, to introduce our special guest.
Well, because this weekend is Father's Day weekend, we wanted to do something about fathers. And so today we are honoring fatherhood and the influence of fathers. Again, our guest is Sean Calloway, a husband, a father, a professional, and an advocate for blind and low vision individuals. Sean, welcome.
Welcome, Brother Sean Calloway.
I'm wondering about these low individuals I'll be working with. Yeah, low vision. You're right. It's a pleasure to be on with both of you. Trust me, I'm happy to be on.
Well, Sean, thank you. And the thing is, Sean, me and Ms. Renee were saying today, we got to get out of this house, man.
This house is going stir crazy.
And I know as busy as your schedule is, I know you spend more time at home than you probably like to, although you do have a pleasant diversion and your wonderful daughter. So, Ms. Renee.
Yes.
Yeah, so this is your maiden voyage with us, and usually we take it, you know, easy on you, so we won't roast you over as hard as we usually do. But when you come back, your family and all bets off, okay?
Well, I appreciate it. Yes, sir.
Okay. All right, Mr.
Well, you know it's a slow news day when we start off with a dog evacuating. Okay, I'm just saying. But anyway.
I'm trying to recruit Sean, because Sean has a perfect personality and attitude to have a guide dog. He really, really do. And because the way he have to get around and move and stuff, I'm really hoping along the way, I know he have thought about it, but he is a perfect candidate to have a guide dog.
So well, you know what? It's funny you mentioned that, but you know, my daughter has been crying to get a dog, and I just can't see that dog lasting long as a service animal if that dog comes in our house. So I don't know.
we'll talk. Let's talk.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
All right, Ms. Renee, go ahead.
Well, Sean, we want to start out so we can give our listeners an idea of who Sean Calloway is and who Sean Calloway is as a father and who Sean Calloway is as a husband and a professional. So we're going to start at the beginning, which is always a good place to start. When and where were you born?
Born in Washington, D.C. Yeah, born in the city, Freedman's Hospital, and you know, yeah, stayed about good eight, 9 years, and like a lot of black families back then, they felt that PG County was the place to move. So, pretty much spent my adolescent and my teen years in Prince George's County before headed off to college.
Okay. And you mentioned that you went to college, so let's talk a little bit about schooling. So what kind of student were you before college?
Well, this got truth and consequences, so go ahead.
A struggling student. You know, Renee, back then, you know, well, as a student, I was what they call a late bloomer. Matter of fact, it wasn't until I saw a movie called School Days, which was, you know, the director of that movie was a man named Spike Lee, that I realized that college was actually fun. And so once I saw that movie after my 10th grade year, I actually buckled down and made the honor roll for the first time and all that other stuff. Mm. And also in conjunction with that, I really wanted to get out of the D.C. area because that was a time where, you know, D.C. was labeled the murder capital of the world due to the crack epidemic and a lot of murders that were going on at the time, especially against African-American men, young men. So I was just like, man, I want to get out of here. So I left college and ended up going all the way down South Carolina. So, so as a student, Renee, I was a late bloomer. But, you know, it was one of those better late than never type of stories for me.
And, you know, I think that's so important for people to hear because a lot of kids are struggling with being at home doing the distance learning. And it's not for everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, all of us have different learning styles, and we have to respect that. So I'm glad that you shared that story with us. Sean, something happened that changed the course of your life. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So when I went to school in South Carolina, South Carolina State University, during my sophomore year, I was getting prepared for a class, and this guy came into my dorm room playing with a gun, and the gun went off and hit me in the temple, and it pretty much took my eyesight instantly. It ripped both my optic nerves. So needless to say, the reason why I went down to South Carolina was the reason why I ended up coming back home, which was to avoid something like that. So that was a very tough pill to swallow, not only for myself but for my parents and, you know, family members as well. Because I think our mode was back then, you know, we loved the DMV as what we call it, but, again, the DMV was not very pleasant. It was a very rough time. So to get out of that, but, you know, and then to come back home under that circumstance was very tough.
Well, Sean, let me follow up with this question. Now, how many people live from being shot in the temple? What percentage did they give you of that?
It was very low, number one. Yeah. And I could have died, quite honestly.
What it was,
I was shot like a 22, which is a very, the bullet is pretty much small out of a 22. But if it was a bigger gun, I was pretty much a goner. Yeah, so it was. Mm-hmm.
So God had plans for you, brother. Okay.
That's a great point, Ray. I know that now, but I didn't know that then.
Right.
So, you know, it's so I'm happy to be here. Trust me.
So, Sean, you went to South Carolina to avoid the violence. You ended up there. What was the adjustment? And not a lot of details, but just some of the adjustment. Here you're a young man in college. Your whole life is ahead of you. You finally have sort of found yourself as a student, and you have this happen to you. And we've got to go to break, but I want you to share with us a little bit about your adjustment and, most importantly, what kept you going. So we're going to take our break now, and on the other side of the break, we'd like to hear you tell us about that.
Thank you. No problem.
Greetings. Greetings. This is Sight and Vision, Disability Senior Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor. Our special guest is Brother Sean Calloway. And we are looking and picking up fathers. So on the best, on the other side of this, you will hear Mr. Sean Calloway talk about the experience of being a father with no sight visually, but sight spiritually.
You are listening to Sight and Vision, Disability and Senior Talk Radio, heard here every first, third, and fifth Friday. Well, back over to our guest, Sean Calloway. Sean, I had posed a question to you just before we went to break. You have brought us up to the point that you were a late bloomer. You found yourself in 10th grade. You began to make the honor roll. You decided you were going to go to college, South Carolina State, where you could get away from the epidemic that was the crack cocaine epidemic in Washington, D.C., to stay safe. You were shot, and you realized that you were blind. Tell us a little bit about that adjustment and what kept you from giving up.
I would say, first of all, it was a rough adjustment. I didn't know at the time, but as years went on, I realized I was suffering from major depression disorder. And so, I was extremely depressed at the time. But I think one thing, the obvious thing that kept me going was my family. But the two main things that kept me going within the family structure was my brother and sister. Now, and I say that because they were 9 and 4 at the time. And so with me being sort of isolated, socially isolated after losing my vision, not going anywhere, not having what we call blindness skills, I was always relegated to the house. So with my brother and sister, the way they treated me was what kept me going, meaning that though I was a blind to them, I still had value to them, meaning that anything I, you know, if I talked to them about something, they were never dismissive. I can always give them advice. They will always come to me for advice. You know, I was still their big brother. So I think that was a true motivating factor of not really giving up. I tell people I had every major sign and symptoms of major depression disorder except the one which is self-harm or suicide. I never even thought about it because of them two. So I would say it was, Renee, it was really those two, my brother and sister, who really, you know, just kept me up and kept me going.
Wow, that is such a great memory. God, thank you for sharing that with us. Okay, so you mentioned blind skills in your answer. Tell me a little bit about blind skills. When did you get them? How were you introduced to the whole idea that you didn't have to that you needed some additional skills as a newly blind person?
Oh, no question. I love answering this question because this is what the sort of the real life scenarios come in. I remember talking to a gentleman and telling him about, you know, just wanting to have a good, meaningful relationship, you know, being with a nice woman. And he told me one time, he said, the only way you're going to be or attract a woman is if you are independent. And the only way you're going to be independent is if you acquire blind skills, independent living skills. And so I never forget, I was receiving sort of, you know, someone comes to your house once a week or something like that. And it just wasn't working for me. And I got the option to go to, at the time, it was called the Maryland Rehabilitation Center. But now it's called Workforce Technology Center. And I pretty much knew that I had to jump at this opportunity. Because it was 5 days a week of training for 6 to 8 months. And, you know, I knew this was going to better me as a person, and I knew it was going to make me independent and really kickstart my life. So I decided to do that right up the road in Baltimore, and it was the best decision I could have ever made in my life because that's where I made a lot of crucial decisions on how the rest of my life was going to go.
Wow, wow. Was the adjustment difficult?
Yeah, because I made the mistake, Renee, though I decided to make this move to go to for training, I still was not accepting of my blindness. trying to acquire training and being not accepting of your blindness, it's like I don't say oxymoron, but it's just like it's hard to do. Like, you're still fighting understanding what it means to be blind. Why am I blind? But yet I'm trying to acquire training to live as a blind person. So that's what I had to fight through. And through when I got to WTC, Workforce Technology Center, and I started, I would say the third or fourth month of my training, that's when the light bulb kicked in. I understood at the time, okay, this is my life, this is what it's going to be. So let me go ahead and really kick up the intensity on this training and just take advantage of what I'm being given. Keep in mind, when you go to these places, Ray, you know this as well, a lot of this
yes.
is not coming out your pocket. It's free.
Right.
So let me go ahead and just take advantage of what this is all about. And I did. So, it was the best move I could have made in my life.
Let me follow up some questions here, because I did go to WTC to take training and all and stayed there. So, Sean, let me ask you this, because one of the things I struggled with a little bit was two things. One, the social aspect of it, because it is different disabilities. It is, other than other blind people, and just a whole different social layer. So I found myself on one hand starting to look at my skills and, you know, and competing with other people's skills, which was good for me because I didn't, you know, being at home, I didn't have that competitive edge. And then the other is socially, that place is like 100, this one, I don't know if you know, it's about 100,000 square feet or something like that. So, how did you socially accept your new surroundings, being independent and going from and a lot of people take for granted, sighted people, just to get up from the table and walk to the bathroom, get up from the table and go to your room. How did, in terms of your everyday, daily skills, started to shape you as a person in comparison, and you couldn't help but comparing yourself. Did I understand that Pete was over there at the time you was? That's a challenge right there. Just know him every day. So how did you find yourself shaping yourself in terms of culture, socializing with, you know, now different because they have other disabilities there too. Comparing yourself, measuring yourself, and just shaping yourself. How did you find that for you?
Yeah, I was, you know, Ray, as my confidence grew based on my training, socially everything seemed to come together. And one of the things I want to say about WTC, they had an outstanding, and it should be the same way because there's a woman named Crystal Richardson. They have an outstanding, like a social activities type of department, recreational department. So having a combination of improving skills, my blindness skills, and, you know, dealing with the social recreational department, but also my instructor at the time, a guy named Lou Smith. Those three entities were ones who really instilled in me to really get engaged socially and meet other people. And also, Ray, I want to press upon this too. Also, it wasn't just people with disabilities. There were individuals there who were substance abusers, right? So you had a gamut of different people. And in regards to Pete, I want to say this about that character, though. One thing about him, always liven up a party. You hear me?
Yes,
if you were a blind person who was down and you were around him, you were going to be up in a minute. Trust me. He that's who he was. And I thank him to this day. I thank him to this very day because he was a big help to just being positive about his blindness and not being ashamed of who he was one of his biggest attributes.
Oh, he'd be glad to hear that. I'll pass that on to him because I talk to him often. Okay, go ahead.
No, but I think that you made, you know, Reverend Ray and Sean, you made a good point because people who don't have that particular disability don't think about the amount of planning that you have to do in your head to get from point A to point B. So I appreciate you sharing that, because we think that you go in there and they give you a cane and, you know, in a week or two you learn that and you learn a few other things. But, Sean, I think the point for, especially for adults that are becoming blind later in life, the acceptance of blindness is a process.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate you sharing when you got ready to really delve into your blind skills, that the acceptance and that other people help you, that this is not a journey that you take by yourself. There's an African proverb that says, if you want to go fast, go by yourself. If you want to go long, go with companions. And I think that's what you shared with us. If you want to go long, you get some people around you that can support you, that can give you skills, that can make you laugh, Pete. I don't know Pete, audience either, so this is a joke between them. But I think that's what you were able to share with us. So what was the most difficult blind skill for you to master?
That's a good question. I would say Braille. It's a combination of Braille and then the orientation and mobility. You know, when you're talking about walking in the middle of the street with your white cane, that could be, for the first time, that could be quite frightening. So I think once I got, that was very difficult in a sense, because I had to overcome a fear in a sense. But once I overcame that fear, everything seemed to kind of flow. Braille was just one of those things. It wasn't really difficult. It's just you got to practice, and you really got to just, you know, maintain your focus with that. And but I would say, I really enjoyed the cookie, and because I like to eat, so that was pretty fun. but the assistive technology and the cooking were no problem. I think it was more so the orientation and mobility and the Braille. Those were the two kind of, I would say, most difficult, but I end up mastering, but it was cool.
Now, for those of us who aren't familiar with orientation and mobility, give us the Google definition or the Wikipedia definition of what is orientation and mobility.
Orientation and mobility is basically the utilization of the white cane, meaning how you navigate your surroundings with the use of a cane. So If I'm walking down the street with no assistance, using my white cane, that's sort of the orientation and mobility, right? If I'm walking across the street, that's orientation and mobility. If I'm waiting on the bus and I'm getting on the bus and I'm, you know, riding public transportation, that's orientation and mobility. So it basically is navigating your surroundings with a white cane.
Okay. All right, Reverend Ray.
Is that right, Ray? Am I right?
Yeah. That's right.
Okay.
And Sean, as you say, to be able to have the confidence in realizing those people driving them cars is not trying to hit you on purpose. And it's a more stuff, and that's why I got me a dog. Okay, I figured that dog didn't want to get hit, so I figured I was safe. Because one of the things when I do presentations and I talk about using this cane is some of the things that we have to watch out for. If it's raining hard, it takes away our hearing. If the wind is blowing, we got to stand at the corner and hope and pray that, you know, that we can get across. So there are some things, and then going around objects, you know, hitting them to be able to go around them and over the head. And that's the other thing, I got a dog, because I was walking into over the head hanging things where that dog would take me around, and that cane just wasn't long enough. But anyway, so that's what it is, you know, for me. So, Ms. Renee, what would you ask me to go to the break? All right, you listen to the Sight and Vision Disability Senior Talk Radio Show. I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, and our special guest, and this is Sean Calloway, a man of many, many positions. And he has so many positions that we have a friend say, Sean, you in charge of everything. We'll talk to the everything man on the other side of the break.
Well, we want to thank our sponsor, Big Bad Wolf, a Primo pet store located in Northwest Washington, D.C. They carry raw, organic, and premium food. If your dog needs it, they more than likely have it. They have store-to-door deliveries in the DMV. So give them a call at 202-747-3434. 202-747-3434. You are listening to Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio, heard here every second, fourth, Friday. I got corrected. It's every second. Oh, never mind.
No.
My cues are all messed up. The Reverend will straighten it out. He'll tell you. All right, Reverend, back over to you.
All righty. We're going to be with our special guest in a moment, but this segment is called the good, the bad, the ugly, things that affect persons with disability and seniors. And the good, and is brought to you by Real Time Pain Relief, the most effective, best smelling pain reliever in the world is Real Time. You just rub it on and the pain is gone. The good, I would say, a lot of people probably getting zoomed out, because I know I'm getting zoomed out, is that, but for a lot of people with disability that not able to make meetings, physically, sometimes towards the end of the month, they don't have enough money for metro access, transportation and stuff. So, and people that don't usually get to talk to people, not only locally, but all over the country, I would say for disability community, that has been a good thing. And I certainly had noticed, like, more people getting in contact with schoolmates. I mean, I talked to some schoolmates I went to Maryland School for the Blind with 30, 40, 50 years ago. So that's a good, I would say. Now, a bad is all these folks that went out and carried on, running to the beaches, all of that stuff on Memorial Day, where those states, if you look at them, is starting to rise in the coronavirus. It is starting to come back to show that these people should not have been out there carrying on and stuff. And so that is a bad thing, and especially for a person with disability. And I hear a lot of people, you know, among some of the blind community, they say that, you know, blind people is like a petri dish, because we have to touch everything. You know, we have to. So we can't say, like, hey, you know, so most of us have to just carry a big ball, a ball of disinfectant around, because we got to touch everything. I'm more and more conscious when I'm going down a step. If I don't have gloves on, I'm touching the rail and I forget about it. I don't know how all didn't come up touching that rail coming up the steps. Or even with a blind people putting their hands on the wall, it's just so many things that we have to touch. And one of the funny things is that, you know, when I used to go out, when I go outside, people always want to come over and talk to the dog or touch or whatever. Now I get people saying, hey, hollering at me from a distance. They don't want to come over and touch me or help me or anything. So it's very difficult, especially a lot of blind people that go to their favorite store. They knew the people in there. You know, they would come and someone would assist them and take them around to read things to them, you know, from the packages, and they could touch it. Now, well, that's not happening right now, and you can understand why. So that's a bad thing. Now, still, the horrible thing is I work for one of the large council persons in Prince George County, so I get the statistics every day. I hear about what's going on, and it's just awful still what's going on in our living facilities. And, of course, a lot of persons with disabilities live in there. And the virus, because they're so close together, you know, they're getting that the virus is rising again, killing more people, you know, and all. And that's just a bad thing for us. But one of the things that I would say our county exec, Ms. Alsobrook, is trying to do is she's trying to work out a program with the the hotels, because nobody's going in the hotels, and the hotels, you know, going under, don't have money. So we're trying to work a program out where not only the homeless, but people that's in these facilities, we can, you know, put them in the hotels and get and pay them to try to keep them, you know, aboard. And we just had a meeting recently with the National Harbor. They losing money big time down there. So we're trying to work something out with them to try to keep the businesses afloat. So, you know, so just so many people. And then the other sad thing is that so many people are dying in these facilities. And a lot of people don't know. They think most of these facilities are owned by the city. No, most of these facilities are privately owned, and even the hospitals are privately owned. So a lot of them are going to go under. And so the county cannot tell those private facilities what to do or force them to tell them. They have had people that died and been dead for 2 and 3 and 4 days and stuff. So because the family members won't come get them or claim them, you know, and we have so many people call our office to say, is there money to pay for burials and stuff? And the best that most the county council people can do is you know, give them money just for a cremation. I mean, that's about the best we can do. So anyway, you know, keep people in prayer. And that is the good, the bad, the ugly issues that affect persons with disabilities and seniors. And again, it's brought to you by Real Time Pain Relief, the best smelling, most effective real time pain relief in the world. You just rub it on and the pain is gone. Back to you, Ms. Renee, to reintroduce our guest, and let's have some more fun.
Okay. Again, today's show, we are honoring fatherhood and the influence of fathers. And our guest is Sean Calloway, a husband, a father, a professional, and an advocate for blind and low vision individuals. I don't know why my tongue won't cooperate today. Sean, you mentioned that you told somebody you wanted to get a good woman, and they said, well, you can't get it unless you have some blind skills. So you've shared with us how you acquired some blind skills. So let me ask you, how did you meet your wife?
Well, my wife and I, we have mutual friends. I attended South Carolina State with a good buddy of mine, and he happened to be in love with her best friend at the time. When they got married, Tanya and I happened to be paired up together, and we already knew each other even prior to the marriage. But once we were hooked up, and we, you know, I just had this feeling like it was just more than just a bridesmaid and a groomsman hookup. You know, it felt different. And so when we got to chatting and talking, it was just, I just felt like we clicked. And so we started, that was back in 2002, I believe. And we just started dating. And in 2005, we got married.
Oh, okay. And, how did you propose?
Yes. I got on one knee at my house. We went out to dinner the night before. I mean, that night. And when I came home, you know, I pulled out the ring, got on one knee, and asked her to be my wife. And she said, yep. And so we are, in August, we'll be celebrating 15 years. So,
August 13th. Wow! Wonderful, yeah. Wonderful. And Miss Renee, that is not one of the blind skills we'll talk to get on the knee.
That was something I already knew how to do. So, yeah.
Say what, Sean?
No, I already know how to get on one knee. I was good. I've been practicing that for years. You know what I mean? That was fine. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay, Sean, mm-hmm. What advice would you give to a young couple?
That's a good question. I think that, you know, let me just kind of break it up, Renee, real quick. Because, you know, if you got a young couple, one sighted and one not sighted, right? I think we got to understand that there's a process for both in understanding one another, right? It's one thing to date somebody, but it's another thing to live with them. And so I think it's and being a reverend yourself, I know you really recommend this marriage counseling.
Yes.
I think marriage counseling is huge in the process of young couples, especially so they get a chance to get to know one another, but also discuss some truths that, or things that may be hidden that will be visible to one another. That's one of the biggest advice I have for couples, young couples especially, is to get that marriage counseling to make sure, you know, you get to know one another, know each other, but through spirituality too, making sure this is the right fit. And always, and I mean, I know it's a cliche thing, but to be honest about that person, whatever's bothering you about them individually, and vice versa, you know. But now for blind couples in general, I mean, I know there was a big discussion on blind people not wanting to date somebody because they're blind and all this and that. But you know, I just think it's just one of those things, Renee, where people need to both blind people, if they're dating each other, they both need to be independent. One can't be dependent, and the other one can be independent. That's a recipe for disaster. So from that standpoint, I encourage blind couples to be both independent, both be, you know, have those skills and be prepared to take care of one another.
Excellent advice. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Yeah. Okay, we've explored our guest, Sean Calloway's growing up, his schooling, how he lost his sight, his marriage, and now my question is, since this is Father's Day weekend, when did you first learn that you'd be a parent, and how did you feel?
Man, it was when I first found out. It was wild. It was in April or May of the year my daughter was born, and it was surreal. Like it's one you can't explain because I'm 42 years old. Like, or 41 at the time. And it's like, I'm about to be a parent starting in my 40s. So it's like, it's one of those things where, you know, Ray, you mentioned back early in the interview that I had a plan, right? And I knew if I'd have had a child at 22, I knew I wouldn't be a good father. I wouldn't have been a good father at 32 either, right? I just wasn't prepared. But I was prepared at 42, right? Mm-hmm. And I felt prepared, and I knew I wasn't scared. I didn't have a fear because I felt I was prepared to be a father. You know what I mean? And so that was the feeling. It was, of course, joyous. You know, you're talking about not only for yourself, my parents, this would be their first grand.
I didn't realize that. Wow.
Yeah. We have two. I have two adopted nieces that they kind of claim as their grandchildren. But when you talk about from a biological standpoint, this was the first one, right? And so trust me when I tell you, that child wants for nothing. If we don't get it, somebody get it for it. Trust me. She has no problem. But that's your question, Renee. It was a joyous time. And, trying to just make sure Tanya was okay because, again, she's an older mother. She's in her 40s. So she's considered what they call high risk. It was just making sure we just maintained what we were supposed to do. She was on bed rest a little earlier than usual for a first-time mother, but those were the precautions we had to take with her advanced age and being a mother. But I'm going to tell you, Renee, it was a golden time. It was just the whole baby showers and the excitement and, being in the hospital room and the birthing room, whatever you want to call it, just being in there, man, it was just, it's an experience that I will never forget. So, and I do cherish them a lot.
Wow.
Okay, so the first time you held your child, can you describe that moment?
Mm-hmm. I cried when they put her in my arms. I mean, it was, my parents and my brother and sister were in there as well. Tanya was just like laying there like, thank God this is over. But they put her, put my daughter in my arms. It was something. It was something.
Oh, yeah.
It was something. Tanya was a trooper, trust me. Boy, they, yeah, she, it wasn't no cesarean. It was straight. So
So both of y'all was crying for different reasons, huh?
That's correct. That's correct. Yes, indeed.
He well,
Sean.
Okay. Okay. Well, Sean, let me ask you this, because me being blind, and I had my child when I was, you know, blind as you, and one of the things I was concerned about, tell me if you're concerned about this, I was concerned about that my child would be ashamed of me, and I couldn't do all the things with them that other kids, you know, kids can be cruel, you know, to other kids.
That's
and
right.
I couldn't do everything with him that or her that, you know, that sighted people can do. So are you dealing with that now, or have you and Tanya talked about it or addressed it, or how are you dealing with that? And Ms.
That's
Renee, we're going to skip
right?
that. We're going to, excuse me, Tom, Sean, we're going to skip this ID. We're going to skip that. Just go on through. So
all
answer
right.
that, please, Sean.
Oh, great question. I will say that, you know, let me give you an example, Ray. When I went to meet my daughter's teacher for the first time at her school, you know, she said, "Ms. Brown, this is my daddy. He's blind, but he can do anything anyone else can do." And when she
all
said
right.
that, she said that around her classmates. So that told me, my daughter, she's what we call an old soul. she's very, like she can care less, like, what people think. She's very, I mean, let me give you another example, baby, just real quick, too. There's a young lady named Layla who's a blind young student over at Francis Stevens. And my daughter plays with her when she sees her at conventions and stuff like, or cookouts or something like that. The blindness is not a factor to my daughter. Like, she doesn't mention the cane, she doesn't mention anything. She just plays, right? And so it's like she's already aware, like, this doesn't bother her. She's not ashamed of me. She holds my hand when we go places. When I pick her up from school, I go in and get her, and of course, she can't see me go get her, and it's like, okay. I mean, it's no big deal to her. So she's really, I mean, and some people contribute that to us being older parents having her. But I just think, yeah, it's like almost like she's been here before. So that stuff doesn't faze her, Rick, quite honestly.
Wow.
That's
wow.
a good question.
Wow.
I love that.
Wow.
I love that. So how has parenting changed you?
I would say it's kept me balanced in terms of organization. Y'all had mentioned, you know, it rightfully so, because I do too much, that I really had to prioritize my life, because everything I do surrounds her. So any decision I make on meetings outside of, you know, my regular work duties, I have to say, okay, what's going on with Camille first, and then I make a commitment to what I need to do. Because me and my wife share responsibilities, of course, of, you know, if I got to go pick her up from school or if I got to attend this meeting in regards to her. So it really prioritized me and, you know, get my priorities straight in regards to being orderly, being organized, you know, and, you know, just you know, bring some stability, quite honestly, because I was all over the place. But quite honestly, and they'll tell you, Ray, with, you know, my work with the Federation, for example, I've delegated everything. People will tell you I'm so hands off. I'm like, look, yeah, you do it, I'm good. Just let me make sure you ain't broke no laws, you ain't stole no money. You know, I'm good. Just do you. And they will tell you I don't bother them. They tell me, let me know what's up, and that's it. You know what I mean? And so that's what having Camille here has done for me. You know, because I got to be there for her. And like I said, being an older parent, I mean, you know, your energy gets zapped very quick. So, you know, I'm her play partner. You know, I'm her everything when I get home, you know, because she's her only child. So, So to answer your question, it's more about priority and just prioritizing, you know, and putting things in order in my life.
Okay, well, this next question, this is a fair one. What do you understand better about your parents now that you are a parent?
Well, I'll tell you, are you sure y'all don't work for ABC News or something?
Hey, man, this is Reverend Ray pays me the big bucks.
I trained it well, Sean. I see. But I would say that patience. One thing about my parents, they're very patient people. And see, I was a little wild myself. My brother was sort of wild. My sister wasn't wild at all. So they now that I look at it, I'm like, man, these were the most patient people ever. And one thing they did not do is they did not impose their they imposed their value, but sort of like they didn't force things on us. Like, you know, if we wanted to play sports, we played sports. If we wanted to do this, we were able to do.
Right.
And they didn't impose anything on us. But I think if anything, because I have to practice this myself, is they are some patient people. And I realized that because I Camille gave me a run for my money. She's a very good kid, but she's just something else sometimes. So and when I mean something else, not in a bad way, but she just likes to display,
right,
and you know, she's very energetic. That's the word I'm looking for. So if anything, I would say I learned about my parents, it was that their patience level is extremely high. I'm like, my gosh, so.
That's a great insight.
Well, you know, I have a gazillion more questions I want to ask you about your faith, and I wanted to ask you about your work, but I think we would be remiss, because this program is called Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio, if we don't talk about the National Federation of the Blind. That is, how did you get involved with them? And when did you get involved? And I know that you are the president of the state affiliate. And for those of us who aren't familiar with that structure, even though D.C. is not a state technically, you are in the position of being the president over all of the affiliates in D.C. But why did you get involved, and when did you get involved?
Okay. I would say I was first introduced in 1996, and somebody came to me to talk about the Federation, but they didn't really know the history of the organization, so that kind of turned me off. And so then when I was in graduate school, I met a woman. I was doing what they call an intern practicum at the Asian and Blind Center over in Northeast D.C. Now it's run by Seabury, but at the time, I did my internship there, and after I spoke to everybody, met everybody as a group, a woman stepped to me named Linda Black, came to me and said, have you ever heard of the organization called National Federation of Blind? I was like, yeah, I heard of them, but I didn't like what I heard the first time. So she said, I can tell you about them. And so Linda really stuck with me for 8 years, because I didn't attend a meeting for 8 years. She invited me every year.
Wow.
And then finally I finally decided to go in 2009, Ray and Renee, because as a blind person, I didn't feel fulfilled. I didn't have any blind friends. I knew one blind person, and he was just as dependent as they come. Like, he didn't want to do anything. So, I get introduced. I go to my first meeting in 2009, and I see all these independent blind people, and I'm like, hold up. You know, what's up with this? And then, but I tell you, it was the best thing that could have happened to me. And as Ray will tell you, I got thrusted into leadership quite early and fast. A lot of it was due to unfortunate circumstances, but another reason was because of the death of Don Galloway. Ray knows this. If he's still living today, he's still president of the D.C. affiliate. So,
we don't have a meeting, but yes.
I'm telling you so.
I would say go ahead. I mean, I'm saying, and I remember at least 2012, you've been president since 2012, right?
No, actually 2011 when I became president of the state affiliate.
Yes. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So go ahead so you're involved on the local level, and you also had worked yourself to be noted as one of the what we call seminaries that I had the chance to become. So explain what seminary is, Sean, and from what that you rose from in the ranks of the Federation structure.
Well, yeah, I was elected to the board of directors in 2016. A lot of that, primarily, I believe, was my work and you know, just trying to bring about awareness and employment for blind people, holding job fairs, doing what we call a Washington seminar. We had never held a job fair. We've held them during the national convention, but I presented it to, at the time, Dr. Marwa about, you know, look, we need to have a job fair at our Washington seminar. So he said, well, go establish one. And so, you know, I was able to do that and work with people. So that kind of, you know, propelled me to, you know, have some recognition in that aspect. You know, as people who know me, I didn't anticipate being on the board. I know that's a lofty goal for some people, but it wasn't one of mine. I just love being a part of the organization, and I love just being around blind people. So, you know,
well,
that's pretty much it.
Well, yeah, you gloss over that, but believe me, Ms. Renee, I've been around the Federation for years, and that's quite an achievement. I think they have like 17 people on the board, and never at one time they had more than one black person on that board. I think they might got two or three now, but just to be part of that elite board, believe me, because those people take it, because it is over 700 chapters in the United States plus, and over 50,000 people, and it's in 50 states plus. And I had a peek at their finances one time, and they're taking over $18 million a year, maybe more, and they only spend like $10 million. So that give you an idea about how much going surplus. And I might be off a little bit, but not a whole lot. But anyway, Sean, talk to us a little bit about the national convention coming up this year in a different package, different.
Yes, virtual. Yes, we will be having our national convention from a virtual standpoint, which is a big undertaking, but pretty excited about it, Ray. You know, quite honestly, it's going to bring more people to the National Federation of Blind in regards to convention than ever before, because, you know, people who couldn't afford to go or didn't want to travel or couldn't travel, they'll be able to go on the convention virtually. So it's an exciting time. Looking forward to it. And I believe that most state convention, a lot of them are going to be virtual this year. Matter of fact, we've already had a couple affiliates who have had virtual conventions. So so that's how it's going to be. And there's a lot of activities, Brad, trust me, a lot of them.
All right, we hear the music, and almost time to go. Well, Sean, this has been a fascinating interview. We really appreciate it. And if you want to know more, you can go to give your website, Sean, because all your contact information on your website.
Well, I would encourage them to go to nfb.org, and it would link them to the DC affiliate. And that's pretty much it, nfb.org, and you'll get plenty of information about the Federation.
And Sean is also a cohort in that he hosts and produces a radio show. Tell us when your show comes on and give us information on it.
Yes, sir. Open Our Eyes on Tacoma Radio, TAKOMA radio.org, on Mondays from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And it can also be heard on 94.3 FM on Tacoma Radio in the DMV. So disability inclusion, just like you, Ray. So I appreciate the shout out, my friend.
Well, thank you. And you know that you can go to our website. These shows are immediately put up by our webmaster. And Sean, we're going to send you a link where y'all can put it on wherever you need to put it at. But thank you very much, Sean, and God bless you. Give your wife a hug and give your daughter a squeeze for us, okay?
Thank y'all so much for having me. I greatly appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
So, you've been listening to Sight and Vision Disability Senior Talk Radio Show, and this is our call to action. And our call to action is that you heard Sean Calloway, you heard how belonging to
a organization can change your life. I mean, you don't need to try to find an organization when you have problems. So like an organization like the National Federation of the Blind, go to their website, just put in NFB, blind, and you'll get all the information you need. And so please do that. Belong to something. Belong to something. Okay, make a difference. Make a difference. And you know our motto is, if you can't fly, run. If you can't run, walk. If you can't walk, crawl. But just move forward. Please don't do nothing. Please just do something. So our time is up. We thank you for your time. Until the next time, this is Reverend Ray. And I like to say, I might not have sight, but I can have vision, vision, vision. God bless and be blessed.
You have been listening to Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio. Have an idea for a show? Contact us in all the usual ways. Email us at fnvradioshow@gmail.com. The letters fnvradioshow@gmail.com. Or call us at 301-377-6468. Want to listen to this show again or to a past show? Check us out at Disability. The number one radio.com. That's disability1radio.com.